Welcome to Basic Black. Some of you are joining us on our live broadcast, and others of you are joining us on Facebook Live and Twitter. I'm Callie Crossley, host of Under the Radar 89.7. Tonight, the N-word. It's recognized as one of the most vile slurs directed at African Americans. But the N-word has a complicated legacy. Linked to America's brutal history of enslavement, it is also urban slang, used thousands of times a day on Twitter and embedded in popular hip-hop songs. Should it be banned, as many believe, or can the movement to reclaim it diminish its sting? And why does the N-word remain relevant today? A warning to those of you watching and listening, this is a sensitive topic, so please know that the full word will be used at some times during this discussion. Joining me tonight, Nathaniel McLean Nichols, Program Coordinator for Teen Empowerment, a local youth organization. He is also a senior at UMass Boston. Nicole Dutton, poet. She is also the managing editor of Transition Magazine and the Du Bois Review at the Hutchins Center for African and African American Research at Harvard University. Susan X. James, principal of Navigators Consulting. She has over 25 years of experience working in the field of culture, diversity, and inclusion. And Rasan Hall, director of the Racial Justice Program for the ACLU of Massachusetts. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you for having us.
So I want to do just a quick round robin and ask each of you why you think this word has such an enduring legacy. Let's start with you, Nathaniel.
I think for me, it's the music. You know, I think it's become really just like a phenomenon in music. And I hear every day, whether it's in person, Twitter, whatever it is, you know, people just being like singing songs or quoting song lyrics from their people, you know what I mean? And it comes up so much in like hip hop music or just in other forms of music in general.
So it's here, as far as you can say. It's here.
It's embedded in it.
Okay. All right, Susan.
Because I think that the word's attached to power, and the words that we use describe the world that we live in, and that word has been used to describe the power relationships between black and white people in this country from the beginning, and it continues to describe it in ways that are both uplifting and problematic.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there has been an ability of black people to be creative and reclaim the word. And for as much as that creates problems for people, people who have experienced the pain of that word and along with the power, that creates tension within the community, but the prevalence of it in culture, in music, the camaraderie that people feel in its use, and how it's used, the inflection and intonation of it, I think it makes it just a part of the black experience, and we know how much black culture and the black experience shapes and forms the identity of this country.
And Nicole?
I think language contains cultural memory, and this is language that is from a moment that has not been reconciled, a history that we've not properly dealt with, and history is not going anywhere, so I'm not seeing why the language would either.
Okay. We went to Nubian Square to ask people their opinion about the N-word. Here's what they said.
We're going backwards with the N-word, because now they're using it more. We fought not to use it. Now they're just using it more and more. It's like that's your middle name. And I just think it's so depressing for our people, at least.
I feel like the N-word now, it's like, I don't know. In the black community, it's like, what's up, my brother type thing. Not like a racial slur.
You shouldn't use that word, period. You know, I like colored, I like black. But when you come to that, so it's just something about that. It just ain't right.
All right, so, you know, that pretty much lays out, you know, the spectrum of feeling about it. You know, it really comes down to who's saying it and how it's received. You know, who the receiver is, who is the sender, and the setting, all of that. Now, there are some people, as the woman said in that clip, I don't care what setting you're in, this is just not appropriate. Yeah. I got to tell y'all, I'm kind of leaning over there with girlfriend on that one. Okay. Because I'd like to think I'm a little bit more open. Obviously, I've heard it before in many other settings. But I was watching the series Insecure, which I love Issa Rae. I think she's brilliant. And I realized I felt assaulted by the continuous use of the word. And I really examined my feelings about it and thought, well, you know, she could use other words. So it's really hard for me. This you know, that doesn't take the sting away because, as you two say, it's been reclaimed. So tell me, Nathaniel, why it doesn't come at you in the same way as it does for many of us.
I think for me, part of it is just that it's become so common. It's kind of hard for me to really like start to look at like the historical implications every time like I hear it or every time I use it. Doesn't mean that I'm ignoring them, but it just means that it's just almost like another word. That's just
but do you have any sense of the horror of the historical connection?
Oh, definitely. Okay. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Okay. And I think like growing up in Roxbury, like that's something that you're reminded of consistently. Like it's part of the history of the community, not necessarily the word, but at least like those injustices that Black people in the community have faced. And they're ongoing. So I think it's never like, it's always at the back of my mind, but it's never gone from it. And I think for me, just hearing the word so frequently, it just becomes a part. Yeah, it's like I was saying, it's just a part of the meta of Black life right now.
So why doesn't that feel, he hears it and takes the sting away. Susan, when you hear it frequently, does it take the sting away for you, or where are you?
It really depends on the context. For me, the context is, like you said, it's sender, receiver, but it's also history and culture, like where is it embedded? And I do believe that a big part of Black culture is taking things that maybe are kind of gross and not very good and making them into things that everybody wants to be a part of. Think about like chitlins or things like that. And so I think about it as a word that was really used as a weapon. And I think that hip hop has always been that space that kind of subverts what's going on in the mainstream culture. So I can hear the word in that space and hear it as a word of love and reclamation. But if it comes at me in the wrong context, like I definitely feel the way that you feel as well. Like, it can be a weapon, but when we're in intimate relationships, we say to people, I trust you to not use that weapon against me.
Mm-hmm. Well, why isn't its use based on the historical links? I'm recognizing that it's to, for some been reclaimed, not an expression of self-hatred.
I think it can certainly be seen that way. But I think the beauty of this reclamation, and I do think context matters, because like with Issa Rae and using it on Insecure, for me, context is this is a national platform that everyone has access to, including white folks. And so when they see that and hear that, and it's not in the intimacy of my living room, but thinking about how they're consuming this, it is triggering. It is problematic to think that they're accessing this. But as my wife and I are sitting and watching, it resonates with some of our experience. And I don't know that it can ever be dismissed from the people who have access to the history and know the history, have lived the experience of having that slur used against them by white people, or have grandparents or parents who can tell the stories of how it was used in a derogatory, demeaning, debasing way.
And just to be clear, Nicole, when we talk about, you know, how it was used, one of your colleagues, Jabari Asim, wrote the book, The N-Word, Who Can Say It, Who Shouldn't, and Why. And he made a point, as did Randall Kennedy in 2002. His book is called Nigger, The Strange Career of a Troublesome Word. Both of them were very clearly detailed about the history of taking the word, using it as a weapon against Black people, and framing stereotypes that still live with us today. The whole shiftless, as Jabari says, man-child, non-intellectual, you know, just useless person, somebody less than full human. And that's, you know, that's the history that I think a lot of people at this point have tried to divorce from the word, but that's the history.
Yeah, and I think it's in one of the important things to recognize is that the language has the capacity to contain that history and to contain that meaning. And yes, it's contextually specific, but two things can be true. And I think that if we have a healthy relationship with the language, then we're going to recognize that all of those possibilities are expansively present in the word.
Do you feel like it's in for you? How do you receive it? If it's, is it again conditional, depending, or
I think it is conditional, you know, and I feel like we don't have to go far back to look at a historical moment where it's being used as an epithet, and you know, and it is a tool of violence. I hear it very much as a tool of violence when it's intended and used as a tool of violence. But I also can take it all the way back to the barbershop when I'm there with my father listening to the old men talk, and it's like every other word, and that you know, it's clearly there. It's not. It is just part of the patter, and used in it's very, I think, neutral. And not a self-hating term, but it's very present in that conversation. So those two feel very different kinds of moments for the word to come up.
I do think, though, this concept of self-hatred is very present in the word, and I appreciate how you lift up the capacity of the language to contain both of these things, because there is that reality where there are Black people who don't think enough of themselves to exist beyond how they have been defined by white society. I think of Spike Lee's film, School Days, when the young men from the college have an interaction with the brothers at the KFC from the community, and they tell them, you know, you niggas just like us. Mm-hmm.
And that's clearly Fishburne, used.
Lawrence Fishburne's character is like, that's not who you are. Mm-hmm. And I think there is a distinction when we don't have enough self-affirming ideas about who we are. And it becomes problematic when people are just like, yeah, we ain't nobody.
Mm-hmm. I want to pick up on your point about feeling a certain kind of way when you realize that a product is out here in the world for other people to absorb, mm-hmm. and they're not necessarily self-policing. This is an episode from Black-ish. The character Jack, he's one of the twins, decides to perform at the school talent show, which includes the use of the N-word. Take a look at the reaction from the audience. Now, you know, you see that, it's funny, they're making a point, but this is a problem for people who, as you say, if the music is there and they hear it every day, why can't I sing it? Mm-hmm. Kendrick Lamar had a white fan come up on the stage to sing one of his songs, which he was happy about, that was fine. They got to the point of his song, he said, oh no, you cannot sing that. I mean, this is confusing from the outside, Susan.
Part of reclaiming the word is saying that we will have the power to define what the word means for us. And in order for the word to truly be reclaimed, there has to be a consciousness in the exchange of that. So, you know, when people hear the word, say, oh, well, then I'm going to use the word. No, that's part of the reclamation, is that there was a boundary that was set, that was that the word will mean this place and spaces of love and intimacy, and it will not change the meaning that it takes in other places, because other places have not changed to see Black people as full humans yet.
I was gonna say, like, I think, just on top of that, like, to add on to your point, we think about the word used by, let's say, like, white people in the space, or white people in general, right? Oftentimes that's seen as unacceptable. But I think the Black community is kind of divided on the way that we use the word, or the reclamation, or what purposes that serves as well. And oftentimes, what I'll see is Black people allowing white people to use the word in different spaces because they feel comfortable with that person, or they give them like a Black pass or N-word pass or whatever, you know, they might say or call it. And I think that is like a point of kind of like confusion amongst the Black community right now, so that we're not on the same page about how we're reclaiming the word or how we're using the word at all.
Yeah. Well, so, and also it comes down to, let me just put it out there, can you reclaim it? I know Nicole said it can be two things. I understand that. But the closest thing that comes to mind in terms of reclamation of a word that has been quite harmful is in the LGBTQ community, and the word queer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's been reclaimed, but it's been pointed out by many people. That was not a word used, you know, widely outside the circle in terms of they're holding two ways to say it for themselves in their own community. Mm-hmm. So it's really not the same thing.
It's definitely not.
But language is fluid, and the meaning of culture and language and the names that we call each other, the words we call each other, it is constantly changing. So this idea that it's always been this way, it will always be that way, isn't really true when it comes to language. Language is fluid, and there is the ability to change. And it's interesting how many words in our language have completely changed, but this one word, we can't take it back. It seems as though it's a move of consciousness to say, we're going to take the power to say, we will create what this word means to us. And so,
well,
I
get that part, but if you can't move the rest of society with you on that, so it seems that, going back to LGBTQ, you can move some other pieces of society to say, okay, I see where that is. But with the word, the N-word, it's there is a fixation there, and most of it's negative, y'all. So it's really hard. So I'm just going to bring this up. So the last few days, for example, there's been a University of Oklahoma professor who decided he would equate the word, the N-word, with okay boomer, like it's the same kind of slur. There are people at a restaurant who get their check back and written on it is nigger. There are students that are taunted, and this is Black History Month, so a lot of this comes to the surface. All right, so people looking at that in the wider community, and even in our own community, say, hello? You know, how to respond, how to know when you're reclaimed and when you're not, when you're in a moment of reclamation.
I mean, I think one of the things that you brought up, like with the word queer, is that along with the word changing, public sentiment towards that group of people is also shifting and changing. And when we look at racism and anti-blackness, it still is very much in place. And so outside of the community and outside of people that might feel comfortable using it with each other, anti-blackness is still very real, and the violence of that word is the easiest weapon that any white person can use against people. So that still is present, and I think the fact that we can't fully reclaim it is an indicator not of a problem with the word, but the wider problem with anti-blackness.
All right, let me put something else on the table. Because we're all in a wider community of people of color, communities of color. Can other folk who are non-white use the word?
No.
So that's challenging,
right? Non-white, that was the challenge.
Because you have some people who are Latinx, right?
Yes.
And they're Afro-Latino,
and they might be
Afro-Latino. Right? Exactly. And so you look at them and their skin is just as brown, if not darker than mine. And conceptually or visually, you would see it's like, oh yeah, that person's black. And if you hear them saying the N-word, whether you like it or not, you can understand where it comes from. But if they are in a circle, community, family of people who are also Latino or Latinx, and they're a fairer complexion, then how does that word apply? I have friends who are Dominican who are fairer complected, or Cuban who are fairer complected, and they use that word because they have lived and grown up around and spent time with black people, and it is a part of that culture. But it gets challenging. There are young Asian folks who grow up in hip-hop culture or hip-hop culture adjacent, and the fluidity of the culture, it makes them feel entitled. But you know, for me, that's a bridge too far, because their life experience in this country is devoid of some of the violence and oppression that has visited upon generations of black folks in concert with that word.
I just want to challenge you on the litmus test being the skin color, because there's plenty of black people that you, could pass,
and
that's not appropriate.
Right.
You know,
right.
Yeah, and I think, if I hear you.
Yeah, and I think it's really looking at like the lineage that some people come from as well. You know, like, it was brought up in some of the material that we read before this, you know what I mean? About Gina Rodriguez and how she's like someone who, you know, like largely would be considered as someone who is Latinx but non-black. You know, they're not an Afro-Latinx, and then, or Afro-Latina. And for her to be able to use the word so freely, it comes to a cultural point, but it's also still something that we don't necessarily agree with. I don't think there's very many black people who are free users of the word who are in favor of her using the word. And part of that comes to the lineage that she comes from. It's like, you come from a, you know, predominantly like white or non-black Latinx, you know, culture and heritage. So it doesn't really make sense for you to be using a word outside of the cultural like perspective that you might bring. It doesn't really make sense.
And for people who don't know, Gina Rodriguez is the star of what's the name of the program? I'm blanking on the name of the program. The Something Virgin. I just can't remember right
Jane
now.
Jane the Virgin. Yeah,
thank you. Was on tape, posted some of herself on tape singing a Fugees song featuring Lauryn Hill, and it had the word in it, and she's freely sing, and she got slammed for it.
As she should.
Yeah. So
it goes back to a little bit to what you were saying, though, which is that you can say the word, and you're, and being private doesn't always mean you're private. If you're live streaming, you might feel like, oh, I'm just in my house singing my song. But if you're broadcasting it, then that becomes a piece of media, and it becomes attached to your brand, and then you have to think about that.
Okay.
I think, too, part of the problem with her wasn't just that she said it, which was problematic, but also her, the way that she tried to walk it back. You know, it wasn't really an apology, and it wasn't really taking responsibility for what she had said or for why it might be offensive.
Sorry if you felt offended by my words, my actions.
She said something like, I'm sorry if someone was offended, so which is the worst kind of apology. That's like a non-apology. So, Nicole, now we've established that language can evolve, that it can be, you know, you can hold two things at once. Often, some words and the meaning of them, negative and potentially positive,
can just leave the lexicon. This seems to have lots of staying power. If you're looking into your crystal ball, is this going away anytime soon?
No.
Okay.
No. No, we just have not dealt with slavery. We haven't dealt with the Middle Passage. We haven't dealt with these huge, these events that have shaped who we are and how we are. And also in terms of power, we have not dealt with the word and the relationship to power. And so these are ongoing issues. And if we're not willing to confront them, and it seems like we're not willing to confront them, and it, because that's messy. We're not, the effort isn't to flatten and to condense and to be, you know, to be as simple as possible in dealing with it. But I think we have to get involved and we have to get messy and we have to get complicated and have to talk it through. And it's not going to be pleasant or easy, but it's the necessary work that we have to do in order to have this just be a relic of language that we can let go of.
Yeah. And Nathaniel, there's a huge generational divide around this, and you're representing the side that, you know, well, I hear it and I just accept it and there you go. So for your generation, as you look down the road in your crystal ball, I mean, you're a senior at UMass Boston.
Yeah.
I assume every day you hearing it a lot?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. It comes up all the time.
So how do you see it in the future? You know, is it...
I mean, it's unfortunate, but I kind of see us moving more so in the direction as younger generations continue to like have the word just be implemented in any way around them. We're kind of moving in the direction where the word is just being used by anyone, which is super unfortunate just because I think a lot of people do ignore the historical context behind the word. Even like people that are around the same age as me or in the same social circles and environments as me have a hard time distinguishing the word as like the slang term, and the word is like an offensive term that was used against Black people in the past, or even can still be used today.
And I should say, there is some discussion around people who say how it ends, if it's nigga with an A, as opposed to nigger with E-R, that makes a difference.
Yeah, and I think it doesn't really. Okay. Yeah. I don't really agree with that at all. I don't really think it makes too much of a difference. You know, that's why I think a lot of people who are around my age as well have kind of taken a stance that, similar to your stance, where it's like, just don't use the word at all. If you wouldn't want someone to use the word against you, then why use the word towards your own people? Why use the word at all? Which I understand. I don't necessarily like agree with it or take the same stance, but I definitely understand it. Yeah.
Okay, so we just had this big conversation about everybody can't use it. So you're telling me that we're moving toward a time where everybody is using it. So how is that going to work then when everybody can't use it?
It's difficult, but I think like, so I'm an artist as well. And in my own music, I tend not to use the word as much because I think that's like adding it to that media culture of using the word and having anyone, like we talked about, like at concerts, people saying it, like, you know, at home in private, people singing the song lyrics and being like, I feel comfortable enough to say this. I feel like the less we use the word in these public environments, like in these like kind of like media circles, the less people will feel inclined to use the word at all. I mean, granted, I don't know, white people, you feel me? They kind of like, they latch on to things pretty quickly that's not theirs, as we've seen. But yeah, I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why I try not to use it. But at the same time, that's one person.
So you know? I do think there's this unique place and maybe role that I play working for the ACLU. We are a free speech organization. And
yeah, that's the other thing. Now people are saying it's all free speech.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I think there's something to be said. And there's this concept that, you know, you don't fight hatred with censorship. You fight it with more free speech. That, you know, and it's kind of like the marketplace of ideas. Mm. I struggle with that sometimes because everybody doesn't have the same market share and because words have power. But there is something to be said that when you stifle the usage of a word, it builds a level of resentment. And so by putting it out and allowing people to, or not allowing people, but not cracking down on people when they use it, it creates the opportunity for the dialogue and the education to correct people on it and to have, help them understand the historical context of why the word is so problematic. Because there are a lot of young white people out here using the word, and it's not until they get checked on it that they have the opportunity to be educated as to why it's so problematic.
I don't think a lot of them try to be educated.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem.
And I think people use it because they know that it has power. It is one of those words that, like, you drop it in the wrong room or the right room, and everybody is going to hear that. And so people are attracted to that power. But I think it would be a better use of legislation to not legislate the word, but let's legislate anti-blackness so that the word has less power.
Right.
And I just want to put on the table that while everybody has the freedom of speech in this country to say whatever you want, you do not have the right to legislate
in a broader sense, what the consequences of your saying it inappropriately is. Mm-hmm. So that's not protected under any law, which I can turn to the lawyer.
Right, free speech has consequences, whether they're legal consequences or practical consequences.
Right, right. And I'm remembering the woman that rode her bicycle beside President Trump's motorcade and gave him the finger. And people said, well, that's her free speech. Well, she had a lot of free speech. A lot of free speech because she got fired from her job. That was a consequence of it. So, you know, you have to understand what environment you're in at that time.
But then we have to think about in educational settings when we're in the classroom, does academic freedom protect people where maybe if they were saying it at their day job, they might get fired. But if you're saying it in a classroom setting, how do you approach it in an educational setting? And are people able to use it? And does academic freedom protect you from using speech in ways that may be harmful?
I don't think that it does, but I think that's a context question. Yeah, and and I think that's the one we're going to tackle in just a few minutes, because this is the end of our broadcast and the end of our show. And I want to thank all of you for joining me. But you stay with us right now, because Susan's asking an interesting question, and we're going to continue our conversation on Facebook Live and Twitter.
Definitely.